We have a special guest here today at WIDE, Mark Helpsmeet, whose programs we broadcast on Tuesdays. And welcome, Mark, to WIDELP.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be here with you, Bob.
I have a number of questions, and I'm looking to find out more about Northern Spear Radio, which you have. Are you the founder of that in Eau Claire?
Definitely for Northern Spirit Radio. It was a little bit of a process to get to the point where Northern Spirit Radio was founded. When WHYSLP Radio in Eau Claire was getting ready to get on the air, discussion went around about what programming they might have on the various days of the week. One of the suggestions that came up was, well, on Sunday maybe we should have something that's kind of spiritual, something that's special to Sunday. And most people were not very excited about the alternatives because I would say a number of the people were not in favor of having Bible thumpers or whatever, however they might characterize it on the show. But one person said, well, you know, we could have something with, you know, engaged social action. And so someone said, well, yeah, let's have Mark Helpsmeet. He's a Quaker and he's not obnoxious that way. So I think that's the dialogue that went on there. It was reported to me later. The first time they came.
You got invited to do something.
So, yes, they sent me an invitation. And the first time the invitation came, I said, I'm too busy. I just can't even consider doing this. I've got to find what I'm doing with my life. A few months later, someone came to me. He's actually a member of a American Baptist church where the Quakers rent space. And he came to me and said, you're the one to do this. I'll do whatever I can to support you. We'll make this happen. I'm sure this is what Eau Claire needs on the airwaves. And at that point, I was in what's called clearness process. Clearness committee process is a method that Quakers use to discern way forward. And because of that, I went to the committee, I was sitting with it, and I said, okay, maybe this is the opening, this is the time. And so under the care of Eau Claire Friends meeting, I went forward with the plan.
Very good. Well, why don't you give me a little bit more about your background. Where were you born and raised?
I'm a Wisconsinite, born and raised. I've lived in Wisconsin except for 5 months when I was about 7 to 8 years old, where we moved down to Texas, found out that my mother was allergic to the sun and we had to move back north, literally allergic to the sun. And the other period was my 2.5 years when I was gone. I was Peace Corps in West Africa. Other than that, I was born in southwestern Wisconsin, lived there just a short while, and mainly lived within a 45-mile radius of Milwaukee up until I went into the Peace Corps, then came back, was in Milwaukee till I moved up into Eau Claire 26 years ago. So Wisconsin through and through, although there's very different cultures between Milwaukee and Eau Claire, I'd say.
Uh-huh. And how old were you when you went into the Peace Corps?
23. It was a year after I had graduated from college.
From what college?
At Carroll College, now Carroll University in Waukesha, Wisconsin. I was kind of an odd duck, though, in terms of my studies. I figure we've got a right brain and a left brain, and there's a reason for both the emphases that those have. So I was a math major, I was a computer science physics major, and I was a speech communications major. And speech communications is considered fine arts department versus the others, which of course are the hard sciences. And you know, I've got my passion for international folk dancing, which I teach widely, have traveled with as the part of the Quaker group, the Friendly Folk Dancers. And so I've traveled all around the world teaching leading people in dance, which is so different than sitting down and doing a physics equation. So my education at Carroll College, interesting anecdote, a professor, speech communications professor, who knew me pretty well because of debate and forensics, that kind of thing that I was involved in, and having had me in classes, He spoke to another class that a roommate of mine was in, so the roommate carried back this. He said, in the history of Carroll College, he had only experienced two true radicals in the student body. And one was a guy named Barry, who was from New York City, who biked to Carroll College to come to class, to come to school. And the other one he named was me. And I'm not quite sure why he thought I was particularly radical, although I hope I would wear that label proudly. But Carroll College was not a liberal, radical hotbed by any means. So I felt a little bit odd there.
And where did your life go from there? You went into the Peace Corps. What country were you in?
Togo in West Africa. I actually had several opportunities, places I could have gone to. Lesotho, which is right in the middle of South Africa, was one option. One of the places I could have gone was Nepal, and that had some attraction, but then I learned more about it and decided that, well, I'd really rather see women than not see them for 2 years. That's what they basically said, don't expect to see women for 2 years, some other things like that. I was 23. You can't expect a young man like that to be complacent about not seeing women. But there were two other factors that were important there. So I ended up going to Togo in West Africa. I was teaching physics, chemistry, and math in basically a high school setting. They use the French system, so it's actually called the lycée.
Were you teaching in French?
Yes. I had had French from 7th to 10th grade. Couldn't, of course, really speak it 8 years later, but picked it up very quickly and am still fluent in French. I've kept it up, and it's quite definitely my strong second language. I only know a spattering of Spanish, but French is very solid, and I enjoyed it. By the second year there, I was very, very functional and had a great time of it. Actually, my best experience there with my high school students, I set up a science club. And for the science club, I arranged their very first field trip of their lives. And we went into the capital city, which was a 45-hour trip away. But many of them had never been there. And took them to a radio station, one place. And we took them to a medical center, and we took them to the biological research center there.
You said 45 hour?
45 minutes or an hour away.
45 minutes.
Yeah, it wasn't a long trip. Right. But, you know, many of them hadn't traveled very far. And actually teaching physics, you know, I was trying to teach them about air pressure. And so I wanted to say, well, you know, like if you dive down in a pool, you can feel the pressure on your ears. Well, most of them had never done anything like that. Or you go up on a high hill or a mountain. Well, no, they hadn't had that experience either. It was very interesting. And mostly they didn't have electricity at all. There was very little of that in the village where I lived. So they had cars around there. Or at least they saw cars, not that they particularly had cars. So it was a very interesting thing, teaching them physics and chemistry and the spiritual views of the local people. This is something very... I didn't really know how to deal with it at the time. But I had students, very smart students, very good minds. But they also were raised with, and perhaps had good reasons for believing in, what we would call magic. And so at one point I had some very good students that I had tell me that if they wanted, if they had the money, they could go to a fetisher, which would be kind of like a white magician, if you will. They could go to a fetisher and get a charm, a gri-gri. Like they could take a pen and he could cast a spell essentially on the pen so that he could bring it back, and they could put it by their test paper and let go of it, and it would write all the answers for them. So it's kind of hard to teach science when that kind of belief undergirds everything they think about. It was very interesting. And then I ran into people, including one who was Boston educated, He's from Togo. He was the assistant director for the Peace Corps. He said, you know, I don't know if this stuff is true or false or just, you know, what it is. What I can tell you is I have seen things that I have no rational explanation for. And then I had another Peace Corps volunteer who was present for a ceremony where he saw some things that he says, I have no idea how to explain it. So it was a very interesting experience for me.
Have you kept any connections with Africa since coming back from the Peace Corps?
I've only got connections with one family in Togo still, but I've been back to Africa. 10 years after my Peace Corps service, I visited to Togo again. It was very interesting to see changes in those 10 years, dramatic changes. I've also traveled then to a number of different places in Africa. I've been to Kenya, Rwanda. I was there in 2008 in Rwanda, and just this past summer in August, I spent a few weeks in the Congo, the far eastern edge of the Congo, where there's been an incredible amount of violence. It's just over the borders from Rwanda and Burundi, where all the Hutu Tutsi massacres happened. And some of that spilled over to this area, plus they've got a lot of resources, mineral, you know, diamonds, gold, kind of, and various minerals that are highly prized. So there's a number of corporations who want to take advantage of those areas. And so therefore they sometimes, I don't know if they directly supervise or encourage or whatever, but there's killings and violence over that. And then there's also native, the Mai Mai, it's kind of like an ultra-nationalist Congo group. You might consider it like right-wing militia groups. They would go around and kill people who weren't in line with their beliefs. So this area, right next to Rwanda, in just this little corner of the Congo, in the past 20 years, there have been some 6 million murders in this area. We know about Rwanda, which in a very short period had 750,000 deaths. Well, there's been about 6 million in this area over 20 years. So the Quaker folk dance group I travel with, Friendly Folk Dancers, we went to this area this past August, had a wonderful time. We're in small villages, really, the whole time. No violence there, it was looking pretty good, but since then, people we stayed with, a woman was killed as part of this violence, another couple were tortured and robbed and that kind of thing. So the violence goes on there, and I'm afraid we don't know about it because, I don't know, maybe it doesn't concern our oil, or I'm not sure exactly why we're completely ignorant to this in this country.
I can see where some of this background gives your interest in some of your guests on Northern Spirit Radio. fill me in a little bit on the period between coming back from the Peace Corps and getting involved with the radio station in Eau Claire. You had some marriages and name changes?
Sure. Yes, I continue. I've had and continue to have a very full life. December of 1979 is when I arrived back in Wisconsin. Very relieved to be away from equatorial heat. And I located in Milwaukee for the first eight and a half years after I got back. And while there, that's when I became a very active participant of Quaker Meeting down there. And that, I would say, strengthened and deepened a lot of my action. Amongst other things, that's when I became a war tax resister, concerned that 50% of our income tax dollar goes to military. So that was one of the things that was spurred forward in me. Amongst other things that led to was because at that point you could get tax credits for installing solar, hot water solar on houses. I did that up to the limit on two different houses that I owned, had lived in. Amongst other things that happened, I taught a bit at UW-Milwaukee in the physics department. I had done some extra education. They asked me to teach there. It was intro courses because I don't have a master's or a PhD. I have two bachelor's degrees. But they recognized both my experience and my ability as a teacher worked. And so I taught there until the last time I taught was in 1986. In 1988, I moved up to Eau Claire. I was also married in Milwaukee in 1984. And I did something, and this would be, again, typical of kind of Quaker ideas. Alternate living, I guess you'd say, just thinking beyond the mainstream in which we all swim. I believe strongly in egalitarianism of all sorts. And so when I was getting married, I recognized the whole prejudice that said that it's important for a man to carry his name but not the woman. But I also recognized the importance of a man and a woman when forming a household, a central identity, some kind of identity that is their own. So my first wife and I changed our last names. We took new last names, and actually Judkins, which is the name I was born with, became my middle name. And I was Mark Judkins' friend for 5 years until we were divorced. So that happened, and actually you introduced me, Bob, as Mark Helpsmeet. That's the name that Sandra and I have had since we married in 1994. And I mentioned the clearness process before. Clearness, when making important decisions, it seems crucial to be clear that this is really the direction you want to go, to make sure you've looked at it. It's not a logical or rational thinking near as much as it is going to the depths of what's within you. And so the clearness process, you sit with a group of people who ask you questions that encourage you to do that thinking. When you get married, that question of whether you're going to get married is explored by a clearness committee. And so I have a clearness committee for marriage, clearness committee for membership. If you're considering changing jobs, going some direction, a clearness process is appropriate. And so I've had clearness process with respect to both of my names. And Helpsmeet, in particular, was a name Sandra and I considered a lot of different names that would be about of who we are together. It's an old English word that 350 years ago, Helpsmeet would have been a normal word. It was in the King James Version of the Bible. And George Fox, founder of Quakers, he said at one point, and I'm paraphrasing, this is not an exact quote, but he said, in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve were helpsmeet, one to the other, in service of the holy things. And Sandra wasn't totally taken with the word, although there is some history in my encounter with the word. Which eventually evolved, by the way, to help meet, to help mate. Help mate is something that perhaps people might have encountered back in 1940 or something. It's fallen to complete disuse since. But Sandra was not very taken with the word. She said, it doesn't quite hang together. It doesn't make sense. She said, until I pointed out that there's a small town on the UP, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where a couple rivers come together, and the town where they intersect is called Watersmeet. Helpsmeet. Okay, makes sense now. So that's how that name came along.
And you've mentioned how you were invited to do a program for WHYS in Eau Claire. What was that called initially? That
well, when I was originally accepted the invitation, made a proposal to the programming group at that time, the first proposal was too wide and would involve more than I could have possibly done in a week. And eventually we came up with two programs, which you run or alternate or choose between on when you on WIDE. One of them, Spirit in Action, and one of them called Song of the Soul. And very different programs. Spirit in Action was the first one that came to me, but Song of the Soul fit in really well as well. Spirit in Action was completely natural in terms of how I'd always tried to live my life. The idea that whatever we have deepest within us, and as a Quaker, I'm leery to be too definitive about words because we all have reality. I mean, each of us knows, for instance, what love is, and love is central in our lives in one way or another, whether it's love of a partner or love of our species or love of the world. But defining it is not an easy thing. So spirit is at the center of this. Spirit is this non-definable thing, and if you put it in a cage, you lose it. But what's most important, and I think I hold this in common with you, Bob, is that how we live that out makes all the difference. That it's important that we live it out. So the motivation for me to create the Spirit in Action program, this started in 2005. That's when WHYS went on the air. Just before we had election, the year before, 2004, in November, the election held that George W. Bush was reelected. And one of the things that was said was that key to his victory was evangelical Christian section of the population, that they gave him enough percentage points to push him over to beat Kerry for that election. And I pondered on this because this worried me, and it was clear to me. Mind you, I find a number of things in common in terms of devotion with evangelical Christians, although many of the beliefs that they've held central are anathema to me, or the political stances, let's say, that they've supported have been very much different than what I've seen clear to. I'm trying to state that as fairly and as balanced as possible, because with a little more wisdom, maybe I'd see it their way. I don't know. But from where I sit, it looks to me like they had a certain amount of cohesion and energy that people with political views more similar to my own were lacking. And so one of the things I conceived of was trying to find and create a program that would connect people with that deep source of spirit, wherever they find it, whatever they call it, so that it could help energize their lives to make a difference. And very important to me is a sense of community. Many of us who would be on the left or the more liberal, progressive, we often value individualism. It's like, no, you can't tell me what to think, do, be. And I'm one of those people. And yet I recognize how that militates for us against strong, cohesive community acting together. And by the way, I would define as spiritual all kinds of groups that many people won't think of as spiritual. AA groups or 12-step groups are very definitely a strong spiritual theme in our society. And there's a very strong sense of community that goes amongst 12-step groups frequently. But I would also call labor unions a spiritual group. Now, it's become very diffuse in these later decades. But if you think about someone with a common belief and purpose who's really got each other's back, that is a spiritual community in my point of view. And it doesn't have to be religious, as we would call it, but it's got a central core of belief and worldview that empowers action and causes people to live as a community. So anyway, all of that led me then to create the Spirit in Action program. And then the other program that I created was Song of the Soul.
And that came a bit later?
The Spirit in Action program was the first one I produced, but Song of the Soul I started within a couple weeks. It was very close on. And that one came, there's a song, the theme music that I use for it, by Chris Williamson, Song of the Soul. It's so clear, and I don't know, I suppose not everyone loves music, but I can tell you that probably a very high percentage of people, it's definitive to what we feel inside. And usually our coming of age music is special to us. Kind of, it can touch us in ways that nothing, I for myself, if I want to find the most perfect way to express the deepest things, it usually will come out in a song. So I first started the program inviting just anyone on and saying, what is the music of your soul? And they would pick out those songs. I transitioned eventually, in a year or so, to mainly inviting on musicians, the people who are creating and performing music, to share the music that they're playing, creating, and so on. And that's what I've been doing for the last eight and a half years.
And you had two programs, 2 hours per week, going over the radio station. And did this lead early on to the creation of Northern Spirit Radio and the efforts to take your program to other stations?
Yes, it did. I started the programming. The first interview I ever did was at an Earth Day celebration in 2005. I recorded it, but didn't edit it into a final program yet. I did a couple interviews coming in June, July of that year. And by the end of that month is when I first went live with programs. Very soon on, I recognized that I needed an umbrella identity for this. And that's when Northern Spirit Radio, evolved. And Northern Spirit Radio, and that northern part of it, comes from two different directions. Number one, WHYS Radio, which is where I started. They were actually created, the license was obtained by Northern Thunder, which is an environmental activist organization of the region. And so they have the license that they got WHYS. Also, my Quaker identity, Eau Claire Friends Meeting, is part of a wider group of friends called Northern Yearly Meeting, which basically includes Minnesota and Wisconsin and a few outlying areas. And so the Northern was central. And it's also true that I'm a Northern boy. When I lived in Togo, you know, on the equator, I sweated for 2 years straight. So there's something very Northern about me.
So how soon did you start looking for other stations to carry your programs?
Well, really within the first year or two, I was doing that. By the way, I'd mentioned that Eau Claire has two low-power FM community radio stations. One of them is WHYS, and that is community in the sense of there's a board of directors, and they do a great job of bringing in eclectic points of view in music. It's just really great. And that's the first place that Democracy Now! Was played in Eau Claire, mm-hmm. which something badly needed. The other station, the person behind the force of drawing up the proposal to get the first license is Dan Drum. And Dan Drum is an awesome force for these things in Eau Claire. He got a second license, different station, WIEC, and that license he actually broadcasts from his home. And so he totally controls that himself with both music in terms of, and he carries a whole lot of Pacifica programming. I'm so thankful for Pacifica Network, just the riches that they provide to the world and the programming that they share. My programming began being shared via AudioPort, which is the central resource that Pacifica uses. I think it was three, four years in. So I think WIDE was one of the first two, three stations that carried Northern Spirit Radio programming.
I noticed that you've got a list of stations on your website, and I wondered what the significance of the order was.
It's when I happened to notice when they were carrying my programs, because I wouldn't necessarily know. One thing that happened is when my programs are shared via AudioPort, anybody can download them and broadcast them. And so if they download them manually, I see that. But if they take them from the RSS feed of AudioPort or of Pacifica, then I don't necessarily know. So for instance, just this past, starting today, the broadcast that I have is an interview with someone in Ukiah, California, the Mendocino Environmental Center, which is the umbrella group for their station there. KMEC is the station. They started carrying it some years ago, my program. I only found that by doing a search via Google, because they were always downloading it via the RSS feed. So anyway, the order of the programs there is sometimes when they started carrying it. So like, for instance, the Pacifica-owned radio station in Houston, they started carrying my programs just a month and a half ago, so they're at the bottom of the list. I'm still not sure if it has a regular slot on their schedule. So the communications, it's very loose here. It's hard to know.
So that list of stations is all the stations that you know about to carry your program.
That's what I know about, and they either do carry or they have carried, and I think maybe they still carry.
Okay.
It's hard to know. So there's 20-some stations there.
Okay. So that has been growing over the years.
It has been growing. It is, there's a competition between some of the ideals of community radio. One of the highest prized things that we have, of course, is we want to have local programming. We want to get the voice of our community out there.
Right.
And so one of the efforts I've made is any station that I know is carrying my programs, either Spirit in Action or Song of the Soul or both, I try and contact them and say, give me your local folks that I should be including in this, because we are a community, but it's not just our town. Our community is larger than just our town.
I noticed on your website there are some older essays that you posted, which were obviously recorded by you. I recognize your voice, but you don't identify yourself at all. Was this connected with radio?
Well, I put them there because there are a couple. I've got too many projects on, too many irons in the fire. But one of the things that happened, I serve as a representative from Eau Claire Friends Meeting to a ministerial group. So, Quakers of my ilk do not have paid ministry, that kind of thing.
Silent meeting Quakers.
Silent meeting Quakers. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a pastor or anything in the sense that most churches recognize.
But yeah. Some of these essays could have been sermons.
Well, yeah, they could have been sermons. And, if life had been different. I was raised Catholic.
Okay.
And I actually had a very positive experience of that. I know a lot of people who would claim to be recovering Catholics did not have a positive experience of it. It felt like something was being pushed on them, brainwashed, that's the way they might characterize it. That was not my experience. And maybe that's because from an early age, maybe I'm a little bit pathological, maybe I'm a psychopath or something that societal programming doesn't seem to be as effective for me. And in fact, I think that's one of the reasons why I'm Quaker. I'm not told what to believe as a Quaker. I am told to go within and find what's true and try and live that out. So being that kind of independent-minded person that I am, I think it's wrong to put me in front of a congregation telling them what to think. That does not fit for me. And yet, there's part of me which is clearly evangelical. I'm evangelical that people should think for themselves. And that phrases don't usually go together for people, but that's the way that I think. In some of these essays, what I did is I wrote them and I contributed them. The local newspaper had asked the minister's group to contribute a ministerial column in the paper. And so sometimes I had my turn, and so I wrote a couple of those, and then I recorded them and put them on my website. But I haven't done any of those for quite a while, although I actually had an idea for one just the last couple months and that I may write up and put on there. I don't think people need to listen to my voice so much. And that's actually one of the interesting things about doing my program. I do two interview programs, and a very small part of it is me talking. So I'm talking here more now than I probably have in the last 9.5 years on my program. And I find that it's a spiritual discipline to learn to listen and to draw forth from someone else that which is deepest. And so that's one of the reasons I'm not writing so many sermons anymore. It's because what I really have is deep listening and questions to invite forth that which makes a change in the people and hopefully in our nation, in our world.
What do you see in the future for Northern Spirit Radio and your other projects?
Well, originally when Northern Spirit Radio was created, I had the Clearness Committee I was meeting with, and I became clear to go forward on this, and WHYS accepted my offer of the programs. I was originally a DJ, and I'm not a DJ because I'm syndicated. Just like Amy Goodman is not a DJ on WHYS. So I'm actually a class apart, even though I'm local to WHYS, and really love that community of people. So what happened after the Clearness Committee, very shortly, in Quaker speak, and I have to introduce you to a foreign language. You should be grateful I'm not doing this in French. But my ministry was taken under the care of Eau Claire Friends Meeting, which meant that this is a project of the meeting with oversight by them. Not a controlling oversight, but it's, again, they're asking me questions to keeping me to my central leading. And so that's the way that Northern Spirit Radio was, both with local group and with the regional Northern Yearly Meeting group, until a couple years ago, at which point we transitioned. At that point, the meeting said, you've been under our care long enough, you really should file as a 501c3 organization, you should get that separate identity. So at that point, a board of directors for Northern Spirit Radio was assembled. We incorporated, and then this last year, we applied for and got 501c3 status. And I don't know what your experience, I think that, is it true that WIDE or Citywide Radio is a 501c3?
Not directly. We have a connection with the Loser Center that allows contributions to come in that way.
So you have an umbrella. So you didn't go through the 501c3 process application. Well, we decided to go through that. It's a little intimidating because what I've heard over the years is it takes a long time to do this. It's a lot of work, and you hire a lawyer, and it's expensive. Myself and another board member principally went through, prepared the application. We consulted a lawyer, just did a initial meeting with the lawyer, and he said, "You've done it perfectly. Only one word suggestion here that you do this. And I've learned things from you, so there's no charge for our hour-long consultation." So actually no lawyer fees in there. There's the $850 fee, application fee. They said that you'll expect, 6 months if everything's right. You might get it back in 6 months or a year if not, if they have to go through some exchanges of correspondence. Within 2 months, they sent it to us, and everyone's mouth falls open when they hear it because that had not been done before. So I guess spirit and action's working. I don't know. So actually, as of a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, Northern Spirit Radio Inc. exists. There's a board of directors. On that board, there are 7 members. 2 of us are Quaker, and 5 are a motley group of everything else. Someone who's a minister at Unity, someone who's a pastor at a UCC church, and other people who are not affiliated or loosely affiliated with anything else. It's a
and there are board members all from the Eau Claire area.
The board directors, 5 of us are right in Eau Claire, 2 are in Minnesota, 1 in Twin Cities, 1 down by Rochester, and we can have board members wherever. It's that, but we're broadcasting from the heartland here.
Mm-hmm. So sounds like things are going well.
They are, and the board is getting more and more clearness. Part of what I hope and what we hope that Northern Spirit Radio will be, it's not just my programming, because at a certain point I'll go on my way, I'll be too old or doddering or who knows what to continue my work. So we're really looking to bring in other people who want to do programming in the same idea. And if people go to northernspiritradio.org, right on the front page there, you'll see what our mission is, which is about world healing, and it's about finding the roots and encouraging that. And that's not unique to me by any means. I think citywide and everyone else are trying to make this world a better place, and we have some specific ways in which we try and do that at Northern Spirit Radio.
So do you see this going forward as a interdenominational effort or Quaker effort?
Well, interdenominational, yes, and beyond that. Interdenominational kind of, that seems to imply that someone is part of a denomination. As I said, at least a few of my board members are not part of any denomination, wouldn't care to identify that way, and that's great. But what's important to me, though, is strong community where we support each other and we go for those deep things and try and make that change in the world. So interdenominational, that includes multiple denominations, yes. Northern Spirit Radio has a very strong Quaker cast right now because I'm the primary programmer. And there's a certain way that I think Quakers kind of span the world. We speak multiple languages in part because we speak silence. And so definitely, everywhere, if you've looked at my guests, places where I've looked for spirit, you'll find people who are Muslim or who are Jewish or Quaker or Catholic or atheist. It doesn't matter. There's spirit working in all those places, and people might not use those words, but that's not what's important. What's important is how it manifests in the world.
When you think about all of the programs you've done, are there ones that particularly come to mind that you especially enjoy?
Well, let me just say that one of the first few programs, Spirit in Action, that I did was an interview with John Shelby Spong. John Shelby Spong is one awesome person, and he was really one of the very first people I interviewed, which is kind of crazy. It's like starting at the top. He's an amazing, amazing person. So you can go back and listen to that program from way back in 2005, and you'll find riches. I mean, John has such wisdom and value to share. But, you know, every year I find more and more precious, deep, valuable people. Some of them are completely unknown names. I just really can't express how much there's that to be found in everyone. In Quakers, we have a phrase that's widely used. Don't take it as theological content. Take it as an experience. There is that of God in everyone. That if we look within, we will find that spark that is this mirror image or is the seed of this larger thing which is all-encompassing, which is about transformation of the world, is about fullness and wholeness. Now, those are words that I would put to it, and maybe they aren't the words that work for someone else, but it's there in everyone. And so when I go to all these different kinds of guests, that's what I try and find. And I find it in an atheist just as much as I find it in a Quaker. But what usually happens is if you have a Quaker, they've got some sense of a vocabulary that allows you to work with it, whereas an atheist is less likely to access some of the words that I would access. Actually, one of the best statements of dealing with that, I don't know how many people have actually read Les Misérables by Victor Hugo. I read it in French, of course, because I was taking French course at the time and so on. This is after I was back from the Peace Corps. And there's a certain passage in there where it talks about this bishop who is the one who ends up saving Jean Valjean, converting him or making his life move forward in a good way. It talks about a transformative experience that bishop had, who was already an awesome guy doing really beautiful, humble work, where he meets a person who is theoretically an atheist. And people should go and read that passage. For me, it just makes me cry when I think of it.
Yeah. I noticed on your website there wasn't anything that I saw about the history of Northern Spirit Radio. So if this recording is of any use, feel free to use it on your website. And I think it'll make a good addition to my Voices for Religious Pluralism on Wednesday. So thank you very much, Mark, for letting me interview you.
Well, thank you, Bob, and thank you to WIDE, Citywide Radio. I think there's a valuable niche that you have here in Madison that's going to be filled in, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be interviewed for once. Thanks so much.
Thank you.